Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Well, then greetings, everyone, from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the February 26th, 2011 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida, committed to expanding Florida's aerospace enterprise. Well, welcome aboard. What a great week it's been. Things are going on right now in space. Shuttle Discovery 91 feet away from docking with the International Space Station. That expected within about the next 10 minutes or so. Discovery set to join the International Space Station. Six crew members on board Discovery. Six crew members on board the International Space Station. And what were we kidding the other day? Three bathrooms, no waiting. Lots of fun on board the space station during the next week here as we watch Discovery take her final flight and bow to space program history. We'll talk more about that countdown in a little bit, more about the launch. You're invited to join me today on the program, as always. The usual contact numbers prevail. 321-768-1240 is the number anywhere in the nation to get into the studio. If you're a local AT&T wireless customer here on the Space Coast, just punch in *1240. That'll take you here into the studio. Or if you're listening to us live at WMMBAM.com, or you're just more comfortable communicating by email these days, you are always welcome to send us your notes, comments, questions, rants, whatever. Our email address is spacetalking@AOL.com. We'll see those pop up on the screen right here live in the studio. So is anybody out there still caught in traffic from Thursday's launch? What an incredible day that was. A lot of guests coming into Brevard County that day. The beeline, the beach line was practically a parking lot the entire day, both ways, east and westbound, both before and after the launch. I saw at least one friend comment on Facebook and others via email that it was taking something like 4 hours to get from the Kennedy Space Center to the Orlando Airport. And that I think Florida Today reported that in the final hour or so before the launch, the beeline was backed up all the way to, I think it was Goldenrod, which is just that first exit just before you would hit the airport going west. So tremendous excitement. I haven't seen any official crowd estimates as to what the big number was. You know, you start considering all the variables that were in play here. Spring breaks are beginning around the nation. People are starting to come down and take their vacations, certainly escaping all the cold and the snow up north. I think you probably had some residual folks from Speed Weeks in Daytona, the Daytona 500 last Sunday. Maybe they came down here and went to the race first and spent the rest of their week in Florida. Certainly it was just a nice late afternoon launch. An excuse to skip out of work early, perhaps. All of those things going on. And of course, the talk about this being, you know, basically one of your last chances to see a space shuttle lift off. Certainly, if you're a fan of Discovery, this was your flight. But even so, only two more times left in history that we're going to see this thing happen. And I think when you add all of that up, and a general sense that I think is still out there, that there is an interest in this space program, that it's not an everyday thing, they don't talk about it, it's not top of mind, but when it does come up in conversation, there's an interest in space, there's an interest in what's going on, and that comes up, and that means the people are going to drive, you know, in a four-hour traffic jam to come see this remarkable thing that, well, at least for us here on the Space Coast, we just get to go outside and watch it happen in our backyard, and of course, watch our friends and family do the hard work and make the miracles take place. So Discovery gets off the ground. In an exciting countdown that even had launch director Mike Limbach not razzled so much as just, going, woo, glad to get that one off the ground. Had a situation where you're counting down, you're within a couple of minutes of getting ready to fly, everything's looking good all day, and then I never did get it straight what happened at the Air Force side, but one of their computers, one of their systems went down. They either reconfigured or had to get comfortable with it again, figured all that out, and as they're doing that, of course, the window's approaching. The launch window is only 5 minutes long. The launch team decides they would count down to T-minus 5 minutes, which is a real natural point in a shuttle countdown to hold the clock and wait, and just to take care of that last little bit of work that needs to be done before liftoff. And so they count down to five, and they're holding, and the pilot's getting ready to start the APUs, and everyone's just, right there, ready to go. And then we start getting the verbal communication. We start hearing that people are going to be go. But as they explain in the press conference afterwards, there literally is a switch that has to be thrown in the Eastern Range, in the Range Control Center, over on the Cape side, that would physically release everything from being able to allow the countdown to proceed. That switch has to be thrown, or it's just physically unable to go. And I want a picture of that switch. I want to see where that is. I want to see the guy that throws it. I don't know if it's General Wilson or not, the commander of the 45th Space Wing or not. But in any case, that switch has to be thrown. And then that clears the systems, the computers, to continue on. That finally did happen. Then it just takes a couple of seconds on the NASA side to do some quick typing, I guess, and insert a thing and press an enter button and get all that done such that then you can pick up the count. And once you picked up the count, it doesn't matter whether you're 2 seconds away or an hour away, you're within the launch window. And as we all counted it down live and realized what was happening, they had only 3 seconds left. They were 3 seconds away from scrubbing for that day. And of course, all went well. Picture-perfect launch. A little bit of foam came off on the way uphill. You've probably been following up that in the newspaper or online. No issues with that. They're doing the inspection, of course, today. A little bit ago, Discovery did the little backflip in space as it approaches the space station. And they take the cameras and they go look at everything and take pictures, and they'll send all that down. And again, that all happened just within the last hour or so, as Discovery is literally right now 10 feet away from the space station, getting ready to dock here again for the 13th and final time of the shuttle program history. So just an absolutely incredible day that it was on Thursday. Again, the launch took place. Everything went well. They made it into space. They've done the inspection. So far, everything looking good. As we're saying here now, docking about to take place. It's supposed to actually take place at 2:16, just about another minute and a half from now. We'll be going into our first break at that point. Hopefully, when we come out of that, we'll confirm that docking took place. Later today, the crew will open the hatches at about 3:30 and greet each other, go through a safety briefing, and then from there get on with the rest of the flight. Already yet this afternoon, they'll plan to take that big rack, that suitcase rack, the equipment logistics carrier, out of the cargo bay of Discovery and attach it to the International Space Station, a carrier that will sit up there and capable of holding large spare parts for the future use of the space station. In fact, this carrier already carrying a spare heat radiator panel up with it. Don't know when they'll need it, just putting it up there just in case, because after we have the shuttle go away, we won't have that kind of capability whatsoever. So that's literally right where we're at right now. Shuttle thrusters are just now slowing the shuttle to just kiss the space station again. Docking expected any second now. And so what a great time to take a break. We will do that. When we come back, we'll be joined by Dina Ryder-Hicks from the Space Coast Economic Development Commission to talk about some of this post-shuttle world that we're about to get into. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Banky.
Contact and capture is the call from the International Space Station. Moments ago, as Space Shuttle Discovery docks with the orbiting outpost, six astronauts aboard the shuttle now getting ready to greet six astronauts on board the International Space Station. Those hatches will open up here in about another hour or so, a little longer, about 3:30 this afternoon. At this point right now, Discovery and the space station, these two hatches come together, sort of these androgynous hatches that kind of mirror each other. They snap together, and now they kind of wait for all the motion to dampen out. You've got a 100-ton space plane, you know, connecting with a 900-ton space station or whatever it's up to now. I mean, I think the space station is just shy of 1 million pounds right now in weight. But so these two vehicles kind of rocking back and forth, and they get that motion all dampened out. Then these rings contract, bring these hatches together, and then they put that seals everything in place, and they do all the leak checks and everything like that. And if that all goes well, then they go literally open the hatches between the two of them and establish the little tunnel that that allows you to crawl through from the shuttle airlock into the right now the Harmony node is the module that the space shuttle is docking to and has docked to today. So everything going well up there. The next major mission milestone accomplished, and we'll continue to watch this mission and report to you what's going on. By the way, check out the Space Talk webpage at WMMBAM.com. Go to the WMMBAM.com homepage, do the keyword Space Talk, and it'll take you to our show page. And we've been real fortunate to be working with a photographer named Mark Uziak this week, who is a professional photographer, done space for a long time. I think his work goes back to even Apollo 15 or so, something like that, and good friends with him. And he's shot some stuff for us, and we've got all those images now online, including launch day images, which you are free to download and share with friends and decorate your computer with and whatnot. So it's just been a real fun week here on the Space Coast. It's great to have shuttle flying. We got two more to go, and then we're facing the retirement, and we're facing some tough times ahead. And we've talked about them, you know, quite a lot on this show for the last year or so, and there's still a lot more to be done, a lot more for this community to do to help the situation out. And already starting to see some success stories with our economic developers as we try to deal with this situation where thousands of our space shuttle workers are being laid off and looking for new work, a highly trained, highly technical, skilled workforce just waiting to be utilized by somebody. And I think, and before we get to our guest, if I just got to say this once more time, you know, if our leaders can continue to think outside the box, continue to look at things differently, continue to think of it's not just about getting launches here. It's not just about getting new rocket companies here. That's a big part of it. We'll talk to Pat McCarthy from Space Florida here in a little while about the latest work on that. But it's also about getting these other companies here that can take advantage of our workforce. And that was big news today. And so with that kind of as an introduction, I want to welcome to the show, to Space Talk, Dina Ryder Hicks. Dina and I just met for the first time today. She is a senior director of marketing and policy development. She works over at the Space Coast EDC for Linda Weatherman. And if any of you know Linda Weatherman, you already know right away that Dina's got to be a special person to deal with Linda and the hurricane that she is, a hurricane for good, to be sure. Dina, welcome to Space Talk.
Thank you, Jim. Great to be here. Thank you very much.
Well, good. Well, let's talk about the success story, first of all, that was in the news this week, because people need to hear that it's not just all, you know, just all gloom and doom out there. You helped open up, a new plant at the Melbourne International Airport. Some shuttle workers have already found new jobs. Talk a little bit about what was done with Embraer.
Absolutely. It was definitely very exciting week here for the Space Coast. Really, Embraer established operations. They really officially began operations on Monday of this past week. And really, this whole project really represents a sea change for the aerospace and aviation industry here for the Space Coast. And I'll tell you why in just a moment. But just to kind of build on what you were saying there, yes, they officially began operations on Monday with 18 employees. This upcoming week, they expect to have 60 employees in place.
Wow.
And 18 of those employees are former NASA workers.
And these former NASA workers are, and I'm going to guess they're actually shuttle United Space Alliance type contractor workers as opposed to government civil service. But they worked at the Kennedy Space Center. Are they mechanics? Are they engineers? Do you have a feel for kind of what jobs they take?
It's our understanding that it runs the gamut.
Okay.
Everything from the engineering end of things to the highly skilled technicians and everything in between.
Well, and 18 was the number that was used, and that's a great number because it's better than zero.
Absolutely.
Okay. And I heard a little pushback from some of the folks in the media. Kind of that anchor talk that happens after, well, it was only 18, you know, and we're laying off 5,000 people, you know. But this is the start. This shows, it's like you can take Embraer and say to the rest of the community that's out there, someone's already taken advantage of this. You got to be on board as well. Isn't that kind of the message?
Absolutely right. And as I mentioned earlier about it being a sea change, that is, your point is right on. Already, because of Embraer's presence here, already companies are seeing that. And we've just announced, too, within the past couple of months, AAR mm-hmm. is coming here. They're going to be establishing operations here and getting up and running very soon, representing 225 jobs.
Right.
And Midair USA, also establishing operations here in the next coming months. That's going to represent 450 jobs.
Which one of those is the 747? Do you remember?
I don't recall offhand, but it's both kind of a little.
They're
bit
both
of
kind of like aircraft refurbishment,
exactly.
Aircraft
some
rebuilding,
modification
work. You know, the last couple of times we've come into the studio to do space talk here, the last couple of weeks, there's been a 747 of one kind or another sitting over on the tarmac over at Melbourne, and I just think that's so great. You know, I can't wait to be sitting on Wickham Road. You know, basically by the turn into NASA Boulevard, and see the 747 come low approach and land on the runway.
Absolutely.
That's going to be so cool, and that seems to have started already. Our workers, I think what's neat about this whole thing, again, to get back to the thinking outside the box, is that, you know, you think, well, we've got to bring in, Boeing's got to come in and expand, or Lockheed Martin's got to come in and expand, and it's got to be a satellite company, or it's got to be a rocket company. And it doesn't have to be. Our skilled workforce is trained to do things that allows them to work in different industries. And again, I'll go back to the Space Florida example of Avera Motors, where they're working on this hybrid car. The same kind of engineering expertise, the same kind of technical skill, it can be put to use. And you know what? For the guy making a check, you know, and taking home pay, I don't know whether – I mean, I'm sure he loves space more than, you know, whatever – but I don't think it matters to the family. I think just to have a job and to be able to continue to live here with their friends and families, where they've got kids going to school, where they're going to church or whatever, that's got to be a good thing to be able to keep those people here.
Absolutely. You've got it. I mean, many of these folks have been here for, you know, 20, 30 plus years. They've got roots here. They're established here. They absolutely want to stay here. And certainly our goal from the EDC as well is we want to keep them here. We want that brain trust to stay here.
Well, give us a sense. You know, so often we can't talk about things until they're announced. And I know you've got non-disclosure agreements and there's all these things percolating and pokers in the fire and whatnot. So now that Embraer is announced, can you give us just a little tease, a little hint of what it took to get them here in terms of the time and the work involved?
Well, for Embraer, it's quite a bit. I mean, we were competing against, even on the short list, we were competing against at least four other locations across the country that we know about.
Mm-hmm.
So it took a real concerted effort from not only the work we did with the EDC, it took all of the folks at Melbourne International, it took the state of Florida, Enterprise Florida, Space Florida, Brevard Workforce. We all had a role to play in making sure that we had the most compelling package that we could put together that demonstrated to Embraer that we were the ideal place for them.
Yeah, and I don't want to get into the specifics about economic incentives because that'll put me to sleep, and let alone the audience, pretty quick. But, you know, last summer and last session a year ago, the Florida legislature did put in place quite a bit of money and quite a bit of programs. Now, of course, we're threatened to get some of that taken away this session. But did any of that kind of stuff help seal a deal?
It did. I mean, in a sense. But keep in mind, every other location was offering, you know, similar type incentives. What it took is for us to be able to demonstrate our competitive advantages of what we had that none of those other regions could claim or very few of them could claim.
Mm.
One of them, of course, being the workforce that's here. that was one of the things that was really the icing on the cake.
They were in place, and you know, it costs a lot of money to relocate people.
You got
and
it.
All that. So rather to bring the easier to bring the plant here,
yes,
and have the workforce here than to move all those people and get them resettled. That's amazing stuff. Dina, stand by for just a minute here. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour. We take our 5-minute built-in hold, is like we like to call it around here. Everyone gets a chance to take a break, get caught up on the latest news and weather and sports. And just to remind everybody once again, the news of this past half hour that the Space Shuttle Discovery is officially docked to the International Space Station. So after getting off the ground, well, within 4 minutes and 57 seconds of being on time on Thursday, I'll take that. They have safely and successfully docked to the outpost. So the mission continues and continues to go well. What's going to happen to the space shuttle when we're done with it? And how is our community reacting? Well, Dina Ryder-Hicks has some more to talk about that as we continue to try to take our message about what the Space Coast is all about and not get so doom and gloom about it. You know, there's a positive thing coming up, and we're going to talk more about that when we return. So once again, 5-minute built-in hold. Sit back, get updated. Space Talk brought to you by Space Florida. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to WMMB.
This is Space Talk with Jim Banky.
And welcome back to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB. You know, that music every once in a while does get me just a little bit of dizzy. It's just a little too loud in your head. It's just kind of the up and down. Brought to you by Space Florida, committed to expanding Florida's aerospace enterprise. And as we do every week at this time, especially when he's available, Pat McCarthy, Director of Spaceport Operations for Space Florida, joins us by phone with a quick update on what's going on with our state's space agency. Pat, welcome back.
Thanks, Jim. Glad to be here.
Well, there's this big conference at UCF coming up soon. We talked a little bit about it this last week. We need to keep talking about it because I think it's got some big potential for us. Talk some more about it.
It certainly is. It's the Next Generation Suborbital Researchers Conference over at UCF for a couple of days next week, and Space Florida is one of the major sponsors. And this is important to us because a lot of the suborbital researchers and flight companies that are coming in are going to be developing new payloads as well as new technologies. And these things are different from the kinds of technical activities we've done traditionally here in Florida. And it's across a lot of different fields, you know, astrophysics, material science, meteorology, you name it. So there's a lot of interesting things going on, and we're bringing these companies to Florida so they can get an idea of the different kinds of services and facilities that we can make available to them.
And they can bring folks here to is it more than just rocket launches? I mean, do they need places to manufacture these satellites? They need operations centers, flight control centers. Is that all part of the story in the mix?
Yes, it is. In fact, there's different sessions on all those different kinds of things at the conference, and the idea of getting Florida's name out there is to make them aware of all the different facilities and areas that we have to support, as well as, you know, bringing their factories down here and building their payloads or their launch vehicles.
Well, and I know that some of this is open to the public, and I know some of it is closed. And I don't want to put you on the spot, Pat, but I did remember looking at their website the other day, and there was a couple of open public sessions that looked really interesting in one of their student union over there. And I'm not sure if we'll have time to get to that, or maybe by the end of the program I can figure it out. But there is something to do for a lot of folks over there, and I encourage anybody that has a chance to visit, they ought to go see what's going on. Are you going over? Is one of your colleagues going over?
Some of our colleagues are going to be there. Frank DiBello, our president, is doing one of the keynote addresses, and Allison Odyssey, who's our resident expert on microgravity and new space ventures, she's going to be over there. And of course, we've got sponsorships with a couple of the other companies that are going to be involved. Obviously, Masten Space Systems, whom we're setting up to fly at Complex 36, will be there in a big way, as well as the Starfighters guys. You know, they're the ones that fly those F-104 jets out of the Space Florida hangar at the KSC shuttle runway.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they're like the first high-speed, high-G, high-altitude reusable suborbital kind of thing you can fly when you think about it, because these guys can fly. They're working on getting up pretty high now. They're up to like 45,000 feet, but They're going to get their pressure suits checked out soon and going to be able to fly up to about 85,000 feet. So there you can take a payload and strap it on the plane or put it in the back seat.
Sure.
And fly it up to high altitude, and they can even give you some microgravity over the top of their parabola.
So the people going to this conference are the kind of people that will need to know about that capability, need to know that's available to them, and then you go work the business deals.
That's correct.
Wow, great. Well, Pat, that's all for today. Thanks for that update, and we'll talk to you next week, see what else is going on at Space Florida.
Okay, Jim, thanks a lot.
Thanks. Take care. Okay, Pat McCarthy, Director of Spaceport Operations, again with the weekly update. We have with us in the studio today Dina Ryder-Hicks, Senior Director of Marketing and Policy Development at the Space Coast Economic Development Commission, and very much a team player, if you will, with Space Florida, part of that. The core group of economic developers who are really concerned, of course, the Space Coast EDC, Dina, are concerned about Brevard County very specifically, Space Florida about the state, Enterprise Florida has pieces of it as well. But you've really kind of gotten into groove here in the last year or so, and I'm going to say especially with the addition of Frank DiBello as the president, to work together to make some of these things happen.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And it's interesting when you look at their mission compared with our mission and the types of industries and the types of economic clusters and industry clusters that they have in their strategic plan really complements what we're going after as well. So there really is a definite synergy there.
Well, and you know, and I want to just take a quick moment, too, to explain to everyone in the audience that we talk about this economic development stuff and these business meetings and these conferences, and I know some of you out there may get tired of that or bored by that. It's not your cup of tea. But it is such an important part of the groundwork, of the foundation that has to be laid to lead to those launches, to lead to those big-time, you know, fire in the flame trench kind of moments. And so there's a tremendous amount of what happens in space happens in these hallways, you know, and happens in these hotel meeting conference rooms and whatnot to make these things happen. That leads to the operational stuff, and I think we need to be aware of it. Now, one of the reasons that we wanted to talk with you, Dina, today as well is that as we face the end of the space shuttle program, and I saw some evidence of that even in the coverage this past week and some of the non-space sources of news media, you know, someone in the middle of America, the headline was final space shuttle flight,
mm-hmm.
you know, or the end of the shuttle program has, you know, is now. And it's like there was going to be no more flights as opposed to only two, or that human spaceflight is about to be done forever, you know. And what that's telling us is that the wrong message is getting out. And I think some of that, too, is happening locally in the sense that people are thinking, I'm not saying local people think this, but people are thinking about our area that once the space shuttle retires, we're done.
Exactly.
That no more space is going to take place, and we're just gonna fold it all up and become one big tourist attraction, you know, and not having to go on. That's the wrong message. And so you and your colleagues and folks in the industry have put together what you call it, a strategic plan, a messaging thing. I mean, how would you describe it? And then. Describe it.
Absolutely. What we call it is the Space Transition Public Relations Strategy, which is a really long name for some key messages, some of those key points that we really want to get across.
Doesn't make a neat acronym.
Exactly.
Stripperaris.
That's right. That's right.
But.
Yeah, when the president was here last spring, we received worldwide coverage, not only from the media, but also from friends, family, colleagues, clients all over the world. And all of them asked very similar questions. Now one of them was the one you just mentioned. Everyone would say, so we understand that the space program is being canceled. And, of course, the first thing out of my mouth, no, the space program is not being canceled. It's
right.
Only that the shuttle is retiring. So Linda Weatherman, my president and CEO, and I were sitting around and when we were talking about this and about the amount of coverage that we received, and I reiterated a story to her. Last spring, I was on an airplane coming back from Washington, D.C., mm-hmm. and a colleague of mine was a couple of rows ahead of me, and I was just kind of half listening to the conversation, and I heard the gentleman next to her say, when he found out where she was from, he said, oh, so what's going on there? So the space program's being canceled? And, of course,
mm-hmm.
she you know, cleared that right off the bat. And then he said, well, okay, so the shuttle's retiring. What's going to happen, and what are you all doing about it? And she proceeded to start talking about all of the great things that are here. Yeah. Yes, aerospace is a huge component of what we do, and that will remain. But she started talking about some of those other things. And as Linda and I were sitting there, she said, that's it. Let's put together, let's get our colleagues in the industry, let's get our colleagues together, let's put together a set of key messages and key speaking points so we can all do the same thing and we can all be saying the same thing and make sure that we're getting the message out that, you know, while the space shuttle is retiring and yes, there's going to be job loss, we don't want to sugarcoat it in any way because right. we are going to feel a sting. But look at what this community has done. And one of the questions that we get quite a bit is this going to be a repeat of the Apollo program?
Right.
And our answer to that is no. And I'll tell you why. The reason being is that this community has done an exceptional job over the past 35 years of making sure that the Space Coast economy is diverse. We've got, you know, of course, aerospace and aviation, but we've got advanced communications, electronics, homeland security and national defense, emerging technologies, which could encompass any number of things. Our high-tech environment will indeed continue to thrive, and that's the key message that we want to make sure that we're getting out there.
This is basically about a 10-page document available online. We'll tell you where in just a moment. But I'm looking at it right now again, every community leader, whether you're elected or not, every business leader, every chamber member, every Rotary Club ought to have a copy of this, download it, and talk about it at their next meeting. Because not only is it incredibly informative about how incredibly, almost an impactful, which is not a word.
Right.
but what the true economic impact is of space. And then again, by doing that, showing you what incredible resource we are for other folks that want to come in, like Embraer, to take advantage of what we have here. And to answer these questions point blank, here's some of the ones that are right here in bold. What kind of economic impact did NASA and the aerospace industry have on Florida and the Space Coast? The one, Dina, you just referred to about retirement of the shuttle being compared to the end of Apollo. What unique characteristics does the Space Coast have to attract businesses interested in relocating or expanding here? You know, and you read the answer, and you don't have to be an economic major to understand what they're saying here. And I think that's the beauty of this document. This really is a very approachable thing that's very, you know, and you don't have to memorize it, but if you can have it standing by and having it available, just tremendous resource here. We've been gabbing here. We're already coming up on a break. Dina, stand by. We'll come back to you in just a minute. And we'll wrap up with Dina, tell you how to get this document, and then also take a look ahead at our launch forecast and the other usual business of the week here on this episode of Space Talk. And you are listening to Space Talk, brought to you by Space Florida. And I'm Jim Banky, and this is WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk, sponsored by Space Florida. Space Talk also brought to you today by the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. You know, the snowbirds have begun showing up en masse, and if you know someone planning a trip to Central Florida, be sure they don't miss the chance to meet an astronaut, walk beneath a Saturn V moon rocket, train in spaceflight simulators, or, like we did Thursday, even see a launch. And now for a limited time, enjoy $5 off the price of admission. Just go online and visit KennedySpaceCenter.com for all the details. Well, as we wrap up our time here today with Dina Ryder Hicks from the Space Coast EDC, we've been talking about this document, Space Transition Public Relations Strategy, the STPRS document. We'll make it into an acronym if it kills us.
Absolutely.
Because this is the Space Coast. But a 10-page document. Dina, tell us as we wrap up with you where folks can get a hold of this document and how would you like to see them use it?
Absolutely. If you go to our EDC website, which is spacecoastedc.org, You will see on the homepage there is a space shuttle, and it says around it Space Transition Public Relations Strategy. If you click on that icon, it will take you directly to a PDF document that you can download or print out on your own.
And no copyright issues or anything. I mean, if someone wants to make a million of these and send them to everyone, more power to them.
We would love you. We'd give you hugs and kisses.
and at least a chocolate or two.
That's right.
Okay, Dina, thanks for being on with us today and sharing with us this information and some of this good news that's coming out of what you guys and your colleagues at the Economic Development are doing. obviously, this is the time for you guys to shine. A lot of work ahead, a lot of stuff going on. So thanks for being with us, and we will talk to you again.
Very good. Thank you, Jim.
Thanks, Dina. Okay, well, let's take the remaining moments here. And speaking of seeing a launch, believe it or not, we were focusing so hard on Discovery that, well, guess what? We have a launch coming up here. And so to talk about our Space Talk launch forecast, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. And that next launch is this Friday, March 4th, Atlas V. Yep, an Atlas V set to take off from Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. The announced launch window right now is 3:39 in the afternoon to 5:39 in the afternoon, a two-hour launch window, again, from Complex 41 at the Cape. This Atlas V is a mission carrying the military's X-37B space plane, sometimes called the Orbital Test Vehicle. And there was one of these flights already last year. The first OTV took off in April on an Atlas V, and it is basically a mini version of a space shuttle. It's a winged space plane, and went into Earth orbit. Once it launched from here, we didn't hear anything about it. We weren't supposed to hear anything about it, and we were given very little notice as media anyway to when it was coming back. And it did, in fact, land safely at Vandenberg Air Force Base in California on the big runway out there that was designed for, it was an old runway that they modified for a space shuttle landing way back when in the 80s. And this vehicle came down and landed on December 3rd, had, by all accounts, a perfectly successful mission, although we don't have any clue what that mission was, really. But now the second vehicle is ready to fly and do its thing, and that's the launch. So the rocket is on the pad, or the rocket, what I'm trying to say is the satellite is on top of the rocket, and the rocket will, of course, roll out from its vertical processing facility the day before launch, which is the way the Atlas V works. They assemble the rocket vertically and roll it out from its hangar the day before and gas it up and send it on its way. Too early for the weather forecast yet. Of course, if I would take a look at the local weather forecast, not the official Air Force forecast, it looked like it might be fairly good by the time Friday rolls around. Looks like we'll have something coming through in the middle of the week to cool us down, which I imagine will have a little bit of a wetness to it, but it looked relatively benign for next Friday. So we'll keep our fingers crossed on that. Once that rocket gets off the ground, the Atlas V, then right behind it a week later, Delta IV is set to launch from the Cape from Complex 37B. That's another one of these National Reconnaissance Office flights that are top secret. And so we may not even know the launch window until we get just within a day or two of the flight. But as they do, they stack up on us like this. We'll go with nothing for a while and then have three launches right in a row, Shuttle, Atlas, and Delta. SpaceX with their Falcon 9, I think as I drove by the Cape the other day, I thought I saw the Falcon 9 out on its pad, probably doing some tests. And that tells me that that one's getting close as well. I have not seen a good launch date for them for a while, but I do know it's coming up here, probably maybe April, May time frame, I would guess. So that's a look at our launch forecast, again, brought to you by United Space Alliance. We'll have live coverage of the Atlas V launch here on WMMB next Friday. We'll get with Bill Mick and deal with the times and all that and get that word out on his show. And possibly we'll be bringing you live coverage of the March 11th launch, a little early to tell what time it will be, and having to do with other work responsibilities as well. So that's what's going on there. Now, in terms of looking forward to the next couple of weeks here on Space Talk, well, my guest next week is going to be Dr. John Logsdon. If you've been around the space program for a while, you've probably heard his name. If you've watched a documentary about the space program ever on PBS or Discovery Channel or whatnot, I can guarantee you you've seen his face before. He's a longtime space historian, particularly well-versed in matters of space policy, understanding how we got the space programs that we've gotten through the years. He's based in Washington, D.C., and has worked for years as their number one space policy guy at the George Washington University in Georgetown. He has most recently authored a book called John F. Kennedy and the Race to the Moon. And he's taken a really good hard look at the President Kennedy's commitment and interest in the space program, and how the decision to do Apollo came about, and what he would have liked to have done with our space program and the Russians leading up literally to the point where he was assassinated. And it's a story that is a little bit controversial, and a story that isn't quite the way you probably think it was, or at least the way historians usually paint it. And so with that tease, we'll just kind of let that set out there for a week and fester. And we'll have John Logsdon on with us next week and see where that goes. Again, as we move forward, you can stay tuned with us at any time you want and check out what's going on with Space Talk. Visit the WMMBAM.com homepage. Click in the words Space Talk as keywords, and you can get the latest and greatest news on who our guests are, links to podcasts, the past shows, and, of course, right now, all the great photography by Scott, by Mark Uziak, our photographer for this launch here during this past week. So that should be about it for us for this week. Space Talk is sponsored by Space Florida and is a production of Mylas Solutions. Aaron Michaels is my personal chief engineer, keeping things running smoothly and smartly. And now up next on WMMB is the Home Mortgage Law Show, so do stay tuned for that. I'm Jim Banky, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Have a great week, everyone.